The following podcast will contain spoilers, tangents, hot takes, and excessive foul language. Viewer discretion is advised. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 241 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me for John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness is Corey Johnson.
Heyo.
It is time. This has been a long time coming. I've been wanting to review this movie for ages, it feels like.
Review it properly.
Properly, yeah. Give it the old one-episode treatment. I'm sure we've talked about it at some point in the ramblings of episodes 1 through 126 where we did 900 movies a fucking episode. But yeah, this is going to be a good time. This is my favorite Carpenter flick of all time and just one of my favorite movies of all time. So I'm very jazzed to finally get to do this one. And if I'm not mistaken, this is one you really enjoy too, I hope.
This is also my favorite Carpenter flick.
Okay, I didn't just put you on this one.
No, I put you onto this movie.
No, you did, yeah. You told me about this one, and then I was like, 5 stars.
Yeah.
Just immediately. There's my spoiler for what I gave this, but I mean, it's not complicated to figure out if it's my favorite, then it's going to have a really high ranking. But yeah, this is, it's got two of my favorite things. It's got John Carpenter directing and scoring, and yeah. it's religious horror. It's like two of my favorite fucking things ever.
And not only is it religious horror, it is religious horror that thinks so highly of itself that it's like, nah, this ain't even about religion anymore. It's about science.
Yeah, it's about science. A lot about Satan, and the religion does take like a super back seat, but you're right. It's more about science and like fucking what are they? They're what kind of scientists are they?
I think they are like theoretical physicists.
Yeah, they're physicists. Yeah, they smart.
Birak at one point says you're all competent physicists.
Okay,
but yet they're still in college.
Right.
So I'm not exactly sure. So I watched this movie with my girlfriend last night, and this was her first ever time viewing it.
Oh shit.
So the whole back and forth through most of the movie was, what fucking college class is this? We could, like, is it some type of physics class? Like, what is it?
I could have sworn that at one point someone said, why are you taking Birak for theory? And I was like, okay, well, what theory are we talking about? Like, scientific theory?
It's probably a throwaway line that I missed.
Yeah, so don't know what these... Yeah, and I love how he's like, you guys aren't there yet, but you guys have enough, you know? You guys are, like, well-versed, but you don't have enough to call yourselves, like, professionals or whatever. He's a great character. He's one of my favorites. Before we get on to that, we don't really do horror news like we used to anymore, although I do have to bring something up because it's getting out of hand, Corey. The fucking public domain shit.
Oh, yeah.
The public domain shit, it's just getting out of hand. I was like, Winnie the Pooh, all right, fine, we're getting a second one, whatever, it was trash, it was fun. Now Mickey, Steamboat Willie went public domain.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's only Steamboat Willie, and you can't even call it Mickey Mouse, because that was not Mickey Mouse at the time.
Yeah, it was Steamboat Willie. Yeah. So this one's called Mickey's, or something Mouse Trap, or something like that.
Yeah, it's going to be so horrendously dog shit that the directors should be shot.
Should be ashamed of them. Like, I'm all for doing this, but can we get, like, a big budget, you know? So it's, like, actually where, you know, get some well-known actors to do this, because, like...
No, and here's why. Because nobody who has the ability to bankroll that respects the project or idea, and number two is willing to walk that hair-thin legal line where literally you use the wrong type of color palette and you've got the Disney demonic lawyers descending upon you.
Oh, yeah, raining hellfire down. Oh, my God. Like, I don't know. Am I going to see it? Of course, it's going to be stupid. But I'm just like, the day it got announced, I'm pretty sure it was 2 days later, they were like, Mickey's Mousetrap. I'm like,
no, it was like within 12 hours.
Okay, yeah.
When it first got announced. Like, they
had that in the can ready, ready to go.
Because it was, there was a news story that right after Blood and Honey was like, told to be in the works. They were like, and guess what? In another like year and a half, Mickey Mouse goes into public domain. And I think somebody just marked their calendar and they're like
heard.
I'm doing it.
Yeah, because it comes out in March. Like there's already a trailer.
Yeah.
Everything's done. Also, there's this fucking fake ass poster going around saying that Rob Zombie is directing it. Fake as shit. Fake news. Don't believe that. I see it in all these groups and everyone's like, can't wait. I'm like, it's fake. Like, come on, guys.
Rob Zombie would have told you if he was making it.
You're not going to hear from this from the horror page on Facebook. Yeah, he would have announced it like he did with the Munsters. Like, this is what I'm doing. Check it out. So that's something. That's happening. Also, I did see something else. Like, I'm just going to it's more mention stuff in passing that I see instead of doing like a whole horror news segment. But Blumhouse and Atomic Monster are officially merging together, which I don't know how I feel about that. But I mean, James Wan and Blumhouse work together all the time, but they're going to be a conglomerate now. And they're pushing for 8 horror movies a year, and I'm like, maybe don't push for that many, you know, because you're just gonna start.
How about you give us three high quality ones, and that will bankroll your entire operation.
Yeah,
I promise
you're gonna get 5 shitty ones and 3 like decent ones. I guarantee. Like that's like a month.
It'll be down to like 2 good ones.
2 good ones and 6. Ugh. Speaking of Blumhouse, I saw Night Swim. What a dumpster fire that was.
Yeah, I heard.
Oh, man. I didn't have any expectations for it. You know, it's a fucking haunted swimming pool. Ooh. But, yeah. Now, I will say, the cinematography in that movie was fucking unbelievable. It looked gorgeous.
It's fucking 2023, 2024 goddamn cameras.
It sounded great,
there's a reason that the plot line of evil thing kills people, and when I say thing, I mean inanimate thing, why that got left like at the latest in the mid 80s. It just doesn't translate anymore.
The only ones that did good that I liked recently was Slacks. That was funny. And Rubber. But Rubber was like 10 years ago.
And Rubber was an art film before it was a horror film, and then they added blood.
Right? It was like A24 before A24.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure that came out in 2011, if I'm not mistaken, and A24 started in like 2013. So, yeah, there's been a couple here and there, but yeah, and they did give a face to like the thing that was, there's a fucking creepy looking weird ass monster in the movie that's supposed to be like the one taking the souls or whatever. Is so paper thin. It was so paper thin. Oh my God. And they explained it for like 2 minutes, but not even Wyatt Russell could save that movie, and he's a fucking phenomenal actor. So yeah, Night Swim, I gave it a 2 out of 5. It was just bad. Not a good time. But it was only 98 minutes, so, you know, whatever. That's the only reason why I went to see it. That, and it was in Dolby. I was like, fuck it, I'll go see it. It's in Dolby, whatever. And then last thing, I had one other thing for horror news, and now it's gone. David Bruckner is apparently remaking The Blob, which is fucking cool, because David Bruckner did things like The Ritual. He's done some VHS shorts and segments, so I'm on board, because I just love David Bruckner. But, you know, got to keep that shit as practical as you can, man.
Oh, yeah.
Like, as practical as you can. Don't be going all fucking CG. I mean, it's not going to... I doubt it's going to top the 80s one. I don't think it can.
Oh, no.
I don't think it can. But that's some fun, interesting news that I figured I would share with you. So, killer Mickey Mouse. Here we go.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about John Carpenter. Welcome back to January Carpenter. That's the theme for January, where we are doing all things John Carpenter. We're going to talk about this man's success in the 80s. After Halloween, Carpenter followed that up with The Fog, which is a ghostly revenge tale that was co-written by Deborah Hill, inspired by horror comics such as Tales from the Crypt and The Crawling Eye, a 1958 film about monsters hiding in clouds. Sounds fucking awesome. I want to watch that.
And not to be confused with The Mist.
Yeah, not to, yeah. Or, yeah, because there's a Fog, and then there's a Fog remake, which was really bad. From like the 2000s, and then there's a Mist.
That's the one with Dennis Quaid, right?
I think so. I'm pretty sure. Because you had The Happening and The Fog. One had Marky Mark, which was The Happening.
Yeah, that was The Happening,
and I'm pretty sure Dennis Quaid was in the... You can fact check that real quick while I continue.
Yeah.
Completing The Fog was unusually difficult for Carpenter. After viewing a rough cut of the film, he was dissatisfied with the result. For the only time in his filmmaking career, he had to devise a way to salvage a nearly finished film that did not meet his standards. In order to make the film more coherent and frightening, Carpenter filmed additional footage that included a number of new scenes.
It was The Fog from 2005.
Yes.
It was not. It was... Oh. So, it was fucking... God damn it, it won't scroll. Tom Welling.
I don't even know who that is.
Tom Welling.
He's
best,
done things like
best known for Clark Kent from Smallville.
Oh shit, okay. Just a little show called Smallville. All right. So not Dennis Quaid. I don't know why I was thinking that was him.
Wait, is Dennis Quaid in The Mist?
No. Dennis Quaid's definitely not in The Mist. I just watched that recently. The main guy is
Thomas Jane.
Yeah, that guy.
Oh, well.
Despite production problems and mostly negative critical reception, The Fog was another commercial success for Carpenter. The film was made on a budget of $1 million and grossed over $21 million in the United States. Carpenter said that The Fog is not his favorite film, although he considers it a minor horror classic. Carpenter immediately followed The Fog with the science fiction adventure Escape from New York. It both became a commercial success and critically acclaimed, with 85% on Rotten Tomatoes and grossing more than $25 million. His next film, The Thing, we're going through John Carpenter's 80s because I didn't explain this in the first episode, but we're going through four decades of John Carpenter. We did Halloween from 78. We're doing Prince of Darkness from 1987. We're doing a movie from the 90s and then a movie from 2001. Yes. So we're going through four decades to kind of see his progression. So his next film, The Thing, is notable for its high production values, including innovative special effects by Robin Boughton. Special visual effects by matte artist Albert Whitlock, a score by Ennio Morricone, and a solid cast as well. Carpenter's film used the same source material as the 1951 Howard Hawks film, The Thing from Another World. It is more faithful to the John W. Campbell Jr. novella, Who Goes There?, upon which both films were based on. Moreover, unlike the Hawks film, The Thing was part of what Carpenter later called his Apocalypse Trilogy, a trio of films, The Thing, Prince of Darkness, and In the Mouth of Madness, which with bleak endings for the film's characters. Which is fun, because we've done The Thing, me and you. Me and you are doing Prince of Darkness. Me and you are not doing In the Mouth of Madness, but we are still covering all three of the movies on this show, which is cool. And I didn't even know that was a thing until reading this. I was like, oh, I didn't know he did like a... And he has stated this is from him, not just like someone making it up. Like he's...
Yeah, and I have my own, like... kind of headcanon with two of these movies that when we get into part of the story from Prince of Darkness, I'll tell you what I mean.
Being a graphic sinister horror film, in a 1999 interview, Carpenter said audiences rejected The Thing for its nihilistic, depressing viewpoint at a time when the United States was in the midst of a recession. When it opened, it was competing against a critically and commercially successful E.T. the Extraterrestrial, which grossed $619 million, a family-friendly film released 2 weeks earlier that offered more optimistic take on alien visitation. Yeah, this fucking thing was panned in theaters. Yeah, it wasn't until later that everyone was like, oh, this is amazing, and got the recognition that it fucking deserves. So,
you know, that kind of happens quite often, though, in the horror scene with what we consider classics.
And it's funny, too, because there's a meme. It's like the Marty McFly when he's playing that song, and he's like, I guess you guys weren't ready for that, but your kids are going to love it, and it was regarding The Thing, and I was like, that's a fact. So this is actually crazy. The impact on Carpenter was immediate. He lost his job directing the 1984 science fiction horror film Firestarter because of The Thing's poor performance. His previous success had gained him a multiple film contract at Universal, but the studio opted to buy him out instead. He continued making films afterwards but lost confidence and did not openly talk about the thing's failure until 1985 with an interview with Starlog where he said, quote, "I was called a pornographer of violence. I had no idea it would be received that way. The thing was just too strong for that time. I knew it was going to be strong, but I didn't think it would be too strong. I didn't take the public's taste into consideration." Which is crazy because, like, Alien, so, 1979, that was pretty strong, too.
So, but are you telling me that we could have had a even better Stephen King Carpenter adaptation of something?
Yeah.
But people were like, no, too violent.
Yeah, too violent. I'm sorry.
Fuck out of here. Fuck out of here.
Carpenter's next film, Christine, was the 1983 adaptation of the Stephen King novel of the same name. Christine did respectable business upon its release and was reviewed well by critics. He said he directed it because it was the only thing offered to him at the time.
Also, talk about violence.
Yeah. I think it's crazy that people were like, after he had one failure, The Thing, people were like, I don't know if we want to. And then he just made banger after banger after banger in the 80s, which is fucking crazy. Like Starman.
He literally came back and said, you can't fire me.
You can't fire me. He made Starman in 1984, which he chose it in preference. Sorry, which was produced by Michael Douglas. The script was well received by Columbia Pictures, which chose it in preference to the script for E.T., and prompted Steven Spielberg to go to Universal Pictures. Douglas chose Carpenter to be the director because of his reputation as an action director who could also convey strong emotion. Starman was reviewed favorably by the Los Angeles Times, New York Times, and LA Weekly and described by Carpenter as a film he envisioned as a romantic comedy similar to It Happened One Night, only with a space alien. The film received Oscar and Golden Globe nominations for Jeff Bridges' portrayal of Starman and received a Golden Globe nomination for Best Musical Score for Jack whoever that is.
Nietzsche.
And this is crazy, too. So after, this is more rejection from fucking John Carpenter. So after seeing the footage for Starman, the executive producer of the Superman film series, Ilya Salkind, offered Carpenter the chance to direct his latest fantasy epic, Santa Claus the Movie. He made the offer to Carpenter at lunch at the Ritz. And while he loved the idea of differing from his normal traditions in directing a children's fantasy film, he requested 24 hours to think about the offer. The next day, he made a list of requirements. They were 100% creative control, the right to assume scriptwriting duties, being able to co-compose the film score, total editorial control, the cast of Brian Dennehy as Santa Claus, and a $5 million signing on fee. Salkind withdrew his offer from him to direct. Like, damn!
What? This is not the Kurt Russell The Santa Claus, right?
No.
Okay. I was about to be like, okay, now I'm extra pissed.
No, I'm not sure what this is, honestly. I've never heard of Santa Claus the Movie. But yeah, so that's something he lost because of all the stuff he wanted. So after the financial failure of his big budget action comedy, Big Trouble in Little China, Carpenter struggled to get films financed. He resumed making lower budget films such as The Prince of Darkness and a film influenced by the BBC series Quartermass. Although some of his films from the time, such as They Live, did develop a cult audience, he never again realized mass market potential. So that is John Carpenter's struggle, even though he fucking nailed so many movies.
Yeah, he may not hit the mass market, but what I find very valuable in John Carpenter is the movies that he does make. He makes okay, let me restate. The horror movies that he makes very much for the horror community.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I'm doing this horror movie as a money grab. It's, I'm doing this horror movie because this sounds fun as shit.
Yeah, as a fan service to all the people out there who love horror movies. So there you go, some John Carpenter information. Let's move on to the IMDb Roundup. Whatcha? Yeah.
I was like, what are we waiting for?
We're waiting for the whip crack. There it is. Have we seen this prior to this viewing? Absolutely we have. Prince of Darkness from 1987, released on October 23rd of that year in the USA. Rated R, we have no sex and nudity, severe violence and gore, moderate profanity, mild alcohol, drugs and smoking, and severe frightening and intense scenes, coming in an hour and 42 minutes, listed as a horror, which is bullshit. This is me and you were talking about
horror sci-fi.
It's a horror sci-fi, dude. There is some sci-fi elements to this, man. directed by John Carpenter, obviously, written by John Carpenter, duh, and composed by John Carpenter. Also composed by a man named Alan Howarth, who did, who also helped with Halloween 2 through 6, Big Trouble in Little China, They Live, and The Dentist 1 and 2. Cinematography by Gary B. Kibb, who also did They Live, Body Bags, In the Mouth of Madness, Village of the Dam, Escape from L.A., Vampires, and Ghosts of Mars. So this man did a lot for John Carpenter. And that makes a lot of sense because most of John Carpenter's movies look very similar when it comes to cinematography. Edited by Steve Merkovich, who also did Big Trouble in Little China, Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan, Fire in the Sky, Con Air, I Know What You Did Last Summer, Darkness Falls, One Missed Call, Alien Abduction, Hardcore Henry, Escape Room 1 and 2, and Unhinged. So that man has been working for... Unhinged was 2020, so this man's been working for quite some time.
Yeah, and that's a very broad range of things to edit. But it's really funny because, like, in a few of these, so, like, I can definitely see some Con Air cuts in Prince of Darkness.
That's fair. Yeah, this man has done a lot. Obviously, I didn't list everything, but those are some of the big ones. And it's funny, too, because, like, some great movies, like, you know, Big Trouble Little China, I Know What You Did Last Summer. Then you've got, you know, Darkness Falls, One Missed Call. So it's kind of funny.
So, okay, I argue that for the time it came out, Darkness Falls is a classic.
Oh, yeah. I remember watching that and being absolutely scared shitless as a kid.
Oh, 100%.
Because that came out around the
but
same
time.
But it's
not good.
No, it's not. It came out around the same time as The Ring, and I remember watching it just being like, oh, it was a scary tooth fairy. No.
Yeah.
Fuck that shit. It was like, I don't know, 12 maybe? I can't remember. Starring Donald Pleasance as Priest. You know him from like 270 fucking things. He's also listed as Vader Loomis on Letterboxd, like V-A-T-E-R, Loomis. So I'm calling him Father Loomis. That's just,
okay.
That's just what I'm going to call him. We've got Jameson Parker as Brian Marsh. This is actually his most known for, but he was also in a TV show called Simon and Simon, where he played AJ Simon and Jack Simon. He's like 400 episodes of the show. So I guess,
okay.
I guess he plays twins or something like that. I don't know, but I have to figure out where this show is streaming and watch it because that's incredible.
As long as he doesn't have that mustache.
I don't think he does.
Oh, it's so bad.
You don't like the mustache?
No, it's so bad.
Oh, no. Then we've got Victor Wong as Professor Howard Bierich, who was also in Big Trouble in Little China as Egg Shin. And then we have Lisa Blount as Catherine Danforth, who was also in Officer and a Gentleman as Lynette Pomeroy. We've got Dennis Dunn as Walter, who was also in Big Trouble in Little China as Wang Chi. And then we get Susan Blanchard as Kelly, who was in They Live as Ingenue, however you say that fucking name. Estimated budget of $3 million, grossing $14.2 million, shot in L.A., California. You can watch this on Shudder. It actually just dropped on Shudder, so that's pretty cool.
We canceled our AMC subscription like 2 months ago, so we rented it. But it was, for standard definition, it was $3.49.
Weird.
Totally worth the rental.
Okay. Movies that came out around the same time, we've got The Princess Bride, Near Dark, Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2, Steel Dawn, Howling 3, Teen Wolf 2, Three Men and a Baby, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Some pretty good shit there. Where's the IMDb summary? A group of grad students and scientists uncover an ancient canister in an abandoned church, but when they open the container, they inadvertently unleash a strange liquid and an evil force on all of humanity. So, overall thoughts on the movie, like I said, perfect movie in my opinion. Favorite John Carpenter movie. That's also my hot take. This is my favorite Carpenter movie. I know that's not gonna... And honestly, when I was going through the reviews, I saw a lot of 5 stars.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people really, really like this movie.
I can't wait to read you my bad reviews, though.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. So, yeah, overall thoughts. I mean, like I said, I think this movie's perfect. There's not one thing I dislike about this movie. That's why it has the rating that it does. So.
Yeah, for me, it's like... It's one of those lesser-known Carpenter slam dunks.
Yeah.
Like, it's experimental, but it's also super cohesive at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I argue... For a John Carpenter movie that doesn't have any necessarily like direct tie-in, has the best ending.
Oh yeah,
which is one of my hot takes.
Okay.
My other hot take is the opening credits are fucking hilarious, and they serve as nothing but a joke.
What do you mean?
It's 8 fucking minutes uh-huh. of opening credits.
Yeah.
Like, the movie will start and just go, boom, splash cut to an yeah. opening credit for 8 solid minutes. It's hilarious. You stop paying attention to what the information is, and you're just like, oh, fuck, another splash card.
Well, and it's funny, too, because a lot of what Donald Pleasance is saying, you can't hear.
Yeah, like, it's just nonsense yeah, garble.
He's talking to the priest, and it's quiet. He's talking to Howard, and there's no sound, and you're like, what's happening? What's going on? I need information. Okay, so is there any point in the movie that you were hooked after the 8 minutes of credits?
So I'm taking it back to the first time I ever saw this movie
okay, yeah.
for what hooked me.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that would be probably the first like intro of the dream sequence that's
ooh.
Apparent. Cause like
okay.
throughout the beginning of the movie, you're like, okay, like some cool intrigue, yada yada. And it's fairly formulaic up until they give you the dream sequence and then they start explaining the dream sequence and you're like, oh shit, that's what that one other huge detail was about.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's like, ah, fuck yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Mine is really early on, and it's when they go to the basement for the first time, Howard and I'm just calling him Father Loomis, and that you just see the cylinder of the green glowing fluid that's just like swirling
oh,
around.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm in. I don't know what the fuck that is. I like this. It looks very foreboding, and I also really love the basement. Like, all the candles are lit, which is hilarious.
So Jessica was like, good God. And I was like, what? And she was like, there are entirely too many candles.
And the priest is wearing what a priest would wear. I'm like, you have to be dying in that outfit with all of that heat from candles. But yeah, the basement is just so like gothic looking, and you've got all the crucifixes on the walls and all the candles, and then that big giant green goo cylinder is just like, I'm fucking in,
and it's
dude.
All seemingly underground of what looks like just a dilapidated LA community center.
I would love to know where they actually, if they actually shot that, like in the church, or if that was just exterior. There's no point that lost me. I was in for like, I wasn't at one point just like, I'm kind of lost in, you know, the movie now. Like this part just doesn't really work for me. Everything fucking works for me because it just progressively in my opinion, it just progressively ramps up. Like it's a slow acceleration, and then it's just like,
I will agree to a point. But going back to my comment of it's experimental, there are like maybe a total of 3 just minute pacing issues where it's like, all right, that camera shot took like way too fucking long.
Or that's fair.
That like they cut to the sun and moon and it's like, so you all know that I love that. Okay, we took that one too many times too far, and that's funny.
Yeah.
But the whole cut to the moon and the sun bit, I was like, all right.
We want you to know.
Like 12 times in the first 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And I'm like, and they don't give you any context for it. So it's just like, all right, what the fuck?
I think you're just supposed to assume that when that happens, that means, because like they talk about it in the movie, like, it's been kept away for 2,000 years. It's time. Like, I can feel the presence growing. So I guess that was to symbolize it's time for, you know, Satan to be popping out any moment now.
Yeah, and once you, like, watch the movie, it's an entirety, and you go back to it, you're like, oh, okay. It makes sense.
But, yeah, entirely but too like, much.
But, like, looking over at my girlfriend as she's watching the movie, and there would be cuts to things, and she would just make a face like, I don't get why this is happening.
That's fair. That's entirely fair. I noticed that too on this watch, which I never noticed before. I was like, man, they're cutting to that moon a lot. What's going on? Specific horror moment.
So any scene involving the bugs and/slash street people.
Yeah.
They're all good. They're all effective. Alice Cooper is a goddamn god in that role.
Yeah. That's funny. Mine involves that. It's a specific moment, though, because there's a character named Wyndham, which, okay, fucking hotel. He goes outside and gets stabbed by that homeless lady, which is a great scene. But later, after he's been slain, you hear someone saying, hello, hello, in like a very distorted voice. And everyone goes over to the window and it's Wyndham out there. And he's like, I have a message for you and you're not going to like it. And it's like, pray for death. And then his head just falls backwards. And I was like, yeah. Ah! I was like, oh
yeah,
my
it's
God.
Fucking lit.
And then his body just kind of falls in on itself and the bugs go everywhere. I don't know what was with the bugs, but I fucking hated it.
So,
I hated
okay.
it.
So Jessica asked me this too. And here is my idea of why all the bugs.
Okay.
So I think it's John Carpenter's take on just another term for the devil, which is Beelzebub, yeah. Lord of the Flies. So instead of it being Lord of the Flies, Lord of all the creepy insects, plus then what's his name? Beric goes into why the bugs later on when they're trying to dig through the wall to get to Walter.
Oh.
Because he says, you know, they've kept him at bay for 2,000 years. Simple creatures like these insects working toward a higher purpose, those are easy to control.
That's right, okay, that's
and then,
right,
and
yeah.
then that's why he goes, insects, street people, they're all the simple-minded beings.
Okay. Yeah, I wondered how the street people were in on it because, you know, the ectoplasm or whatever hadn't shot out there yet, but
yeah.
they're just simple to control. All right, yeah, because you have this brigade of homeless people that are outside just standing around.
It's not even a brigade. It's a fucking legion by the end of the movie.
Yeah, by the end of the movie, yeah. Favorite kill?
I don't remember. Okay, so
just tell me what it was. Yeah.
No. So I have to ask a question.
Oh, okay.
Do possessions count as kills?
I mean, technically, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, allow it.
So if the possessions count, I nominate my favorite one to be Calder because he understood the fucking assignment of this movie.
Good God, that was so upsetting. Because yeah, like he gets possessed, then he like takes a fucking piece of wood from the chair, cuts his throat, and then comes back to life. I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, like people are dying and coming back to life. I'm not sure what's going on. That's like the one part where I'm like, I don't understand this possession, but I don't care. I don't even give a shit. My favorite kill was Wyndham because he's out there in the bugs and can't move. And then that homeless lady from the beginning just runs out, just like, wielding that spear, just fucking over and over and over. Like
coming at him like an NFL linebacker.
Dude, just charging with that thing raised in the air. He can't move because he's stuck with the bugs. Favorite character is always going to be Donald Pleasance for me, or I really did like Howard as well. I like them together. Anytime they were together, it was like, I really like this chemistry. It feels like it shouldn't work, but it does for some reason. I don't know. Did you have one?
Again, it's Calder because he understood the assignment. It like anytime he was on screen, he was just stealing the spotlight from everyone.
Yeah.
Partially because his voice just demands fucking presence.
It does.
And then also, anytime he was like acting like distressed, you were like, bro, are they hurting you?
Are
on
you good?
Set? Are you okay?
I did notice for the first time I noticed this is right before he gets possessed. Did you? So they're all sitting at the table. He actually takes off the crucifix on his his necklace, takes it in his hand, and sets it on the table. And I was like, is that like some weird foreshadowing?
So and I think that's why Calder gets the most screen time of the possessed of like not doing possessed shit.
Yeah.
Like he's not going out and menacing as much as other people. He's like standing in front of the mirror and crying. I think that's because at the very beginning when they go in and Lomax, Calder, and the guy with the glasses.
Yeah.
Lomax is like, this is fucking bullshit. Y'all should get out of here. If you look at Calder, he's genuinely freaked out about what they saw in the basement. He's the only devout Christian of the entire group besides the priest. So when he gets possessed, he is fully aware of his own possession, which is why he's crying in the mirror.
Him singing that song, dragging the chair up the stairs.
Oh yeah, no, that's
gives me fucking chills every time. Oh my God. My least favorite character is fucking Walter.
Oh yeah, fuck Walter.
He was such a weirdo. His delivery was awful. Every time he spoke, I was like, shut up. The worst. Let's see here. So yeah, the performances honestly for me were solid all the way around except for Walter. Calder sold it. Donald Pleasance is Donald Pleasance. Victor Wong was great. Honestly, everyone was solid. The only weak Link in the Chain was Walter for me. Like,
and it's funny because I said this to Jessica while we were watching it. It was like, this is one of those movies where you can tell who is classically trained and who is just, hey, I'm in an 80s movie.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah. John Carpenter liked working with them so much in Big Trouble in Little China that he hired them them on for this movie. Cinematography for me isn't really anything to write home about. I mean, it looks good. Like, don't get me wrong, it looks good. But compared to Halloween, I think that takes the cake for cinematography. But it's still, this movie still looks clean. I watched the 4K. It looks beautiful.
Some of it's just like classic 80s shots. And then some of it is just that very weirdo experimental, hey, we have to do something different because of the subject matter type of shots.
Yep. I mean, and then this moving on to the score. I mean, it's Carpenter, man. This fucking score absolutely fucking slaps.
My notes say score. That John Carpenter backing track, though.
Oh, my God. It's like, it's very They Live, because they came out around the same time. It sounds like They Live and almost kind of Vampires-esque, but it's so good.
But the thing that I like most about it is if you line up all the tracks, the bass sequence that he plays, that dun-dun, dun-dun, that flows through all the backing tracks and crescendos in that last final one where it's like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and it's really cool because it just goes all the way through what you would consider like the entire album, the entire OST, and it's just fucking... It annoyed the shit out of my girlfriend, though.
Yeah.
Because even in these tense moments, you still hear that
bum bum
dunk 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 dunk. And I'm like, but that bass line, though. And she's like, it's something.
Oh, shit. Score fucking slaps. Some of my favorite moments, I've got a couple here, is one of them is very early on in the movie when that first bum, that lady with the cup of maggots, she's talking, she's like, it's so nice what you're doing here, Father, opening the church again. But her voice is kind of like all distorted.
Yeah.
I was like, I love that moment because you're like, okay, something's fucking wrong. Right off the bat, you realize something's wrong besides the fact that they're just standing around like lunatics. You're like, something's wrong with these homeless people besides being in this legion, as you described it. So, yeah, they're very weird. I also really liked that bite kill. That bite kill was fucking
epic. That was my favorite kill.
Okay, yeah. That was such a good kill. Just like Alice Cooper picks up this bike that's in half and just shoves it right through that guy's chest. The dripping goo was great because at one point you have the cylinder dripping goo upwards into this like pool up on the ceiling that, you know, shoots down at people, and that's what possesses them. And you find out that, I wanted to say what the whole thing was, because this is like the first time I guess I was paying attention during this part, but it's really cool because they go into saying that the container was buried somewhere in the Middle East eons ago by the father of Satan, a god who walked the earth before man that was somehow banished to the dark side. Apparently the father buried his son inside the container, and Christ has come to warn us. He was an extraterrestrial ancestry, but a human-like race. And essentially, they were waiting for people to come along with the like right amount of science or whatever to be able to depict what Christ was saying, because they're deciphering that book down there.
So here is my headcanon
of
how the thing is connected to Prince of Darkness.
Okay.
So it's revealed basically that all of Christianity is based off of Hooky Dooky Space Aliens.
Yeah.
My thought is the thing from the thing is part of the either race of humanoids or is part of the tube itself that got out before it got buried, which is why that all the shape-shifting can occur instead of like the mind control stuff. It lost the power to do both.
Okay. I could easily see that as facts, because,
and there's no proof behind this at all. This is just my own theory.
Yeah.
But I love it.
And they could be that extraterrestrial race that they mentioned in Prince of Darkness that was still a human-like race.
Yeah.
But they're still extraterrestrial ancestries that came from outer space. Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I like that. That's actually a really solid theory of how they're connected. Did you have any favorite moments that you wanted to mention here?
Pretty much kind of to echo what you said. Any homeless or street person moment, any shot of the swirling goo is just awesome. It's pretty to look at,
it
too.
It just looks so cool.
It's the most colorful thing of the entire movie because the movie is swathed in sepia and browns. So to get this just neon silver gold green swirling in a tube. And then I really liked how they would use the same exact dream sequence, just cutting it at different times to go to different people.
Yeah.
Because normally in dream sequence, it's just like the same character over and over again. And I liked that they gave the same dream sequence to what I think 5 people.
I mean, everyone was having it, but you saw like 5 different people. Yeah, have it. And it goes into, and I love how it's like, this is from the year 19. And you're like, 191. And then it's like 199. And then eventually it's 1999. So 1999. So this is like 10 years, 12 years in the future, because it takes place in 1987. So they were sending that message from that year to try to help, you know, help them, you know, deflect Satan and get rid of him, which I have a question, because at the end it's revealed that the person in the church is Catherine coming out of the church. So it's like, because she sacrificed herself to save, you know, everyone there by throwing herself into that mirror. And so I'm like, I'm wondering, was that the plan the whole time? Or is it just, did she replace Satan and now she's coming back?
Yes. Yeah, so I think what it is because, what's her name? Sarah? The girl that
Susan.
So Susan is what I assume to be the body of the devil when she pulls the shadow out of the mirror.
The mirror, yeah.
So in sending in the body and an additional body, the Satan now has enough power to not only have a body, but get out himself.
Yeah.
So he takes the most able
host,
non-decayed from demon interaction body. And I think that's what it is. I think it's just along the lines of a lot of John Carpenter movies. The heroes don't win out,
right,
and the ending is just kind of, well, that's some fucked shit that happens.
Yeah, which is a great ending, because you think that they've deflected the devil and they've won, and then you get the full dream sequence where Catherine comes out and she's now like taking place of Satan, and Brian wakes up from that dream. Actually, he has like a double wake up where he turns over and sees that body.
I love a so dream good. Within a dream.
So
wake
good.
Up. It's
so great. So he actually wakes up, and they did Inception before Inception did. You know what I mean?
Because
he goes up to the mirror to try to touch it, and then it just cuts to black, and you're like, ah, so did they win or didn't they? Because now he's having that dream outside of the church, because only when you're at that location will you have that dream. So now he's having that dream completely unrelated and unattached to the church.
Or you could argue that because he learned the secret of the book, he is now the only surviving member of the Brotherhood of Sleep, which their whole mission was to have the dream and do something about it.
And try to
Because something's been done about it doesn't mean the dream stops.
Yeah,
so
you could
it could be just his own personal curse of now he's of the Brotherhood of Sleep.
God, I love this movie. So good. Anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up here?
2 things. So my girlfriend's hot take.
Oh, yeah. What was the hot take?
You will find hilarious. Her main hot take was, and I quote, "Hokey pokey, there was no real Satan."
Good grief. Oh, that's fucking great.
And then I'll give her rating when we do our ratings.
All right. So let's move on to the post-review shit here. Taglines, where are you? ... Or not just Christ, ... Before man walked the earth, it slept for centuries. It is evil. It is real. It is awakening. So trivia, Alice Cooper used the bike impalement trick in his stage shows prior to the movie. The bike he uses was his own personal prop, which is a lot of fun. Alice Cooper originally asked John Carpenter if he could come to set just to watch a special effect due to Cooper's manager also producing the film. Carpenter eventually decided to offer Cooper a role as the leader of the anti-God worshiping street people. Ironically, Cooper is a born-again Christian, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
The mirror gag was accomplished in part by using mercury. You know, that toxic shit. They drained the poisonous material from their on-set hydraulic dollies and cranes and used it for the bit where the character dips her finger and hand into the reflective pool. Obviously, due to mercury being highly toxic, the arm is prosthetic. The reverse of the shot with the character's fingers poking through into the darkness was shot inside a covered swimming pool. Rated 6.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 3.6 out of 5 on Letterboxd, has a 62% on the tomato meter and a 61% audience score. There's no shock here. 5 out of 5 all day long.
Yeah, I actually raised my rating from a 4 to a 5 after this watch.
Oh, shit.
Because it's just so much fun. My girlfriend's rating, because she flat out refuses to use our rating scale, is a 3.4 to a 3.7.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, that's over 4 stars for both of us. So that is a Frightmare certified.
Slap.
Similar movies according to Letterboxd. We have The Exorcist, Exorcist the Beginning, Silent Hill, The Conjuring, and The Borderlands. Similar movies according to IMDb. We have In the Mouth of Madness, The Fog, They Live, Assault on Precinct 13, and Escape from New York. I have four funny reviews. What do you got?
I think I have, let's see, hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 6 total, but your sheet said 4 max.
Corey,
so.
What the hell?
I'll do too bad, too good.
Okay. So number 5 stars from Willow McClay. On the Scream Factory Blu-ray release, it is mentioned that John Carpenter first met Alice Cooper at WrestleMania 3. Just thought y'all would like to know.
So a 5-star review from Gregory 16. John Carpenter is the most overrated director of all time. He would be my least favorite director if The Thing didn't exist, but he's still a close second.
Wow. Shame, shame. This isn't even rated. It's just hearted by Brandon Reese. Getting into the Valentine's Day mood by watching people puke Satan into each other and reach through mirrors to touch the devil's dad.
Another 5-star review from Hirapulsa. Mixing science with religion is bullshit. Hated. Didn't watch till the end, but I saw enough. You didn't even watch the best part.
What the fuck? 3.5 stars from Cinema Void. Every grad program should require a paper on the quantum physics of a lava lamp filled with subatomic evil in an abandoned church for extra credits.
From... I love this because this person is a pro member of Letterboxd.
I'm a patron.
Chopper LBP, 5 stars and a heart.
Ooh.
What if science discovered Satan?
All right, my last one, not rated or hearted, just a review. It said, so homelessness is more of a satanic issue than a systemic one. Oh, fuck.
I have 2 more. One of that, but they're both fucking hilarious, so I'm going to do both.
That's
of them.
Fine. That's fine.
Diego Crespo, 5 stars and a heart. Hell yeah. Fuck yeah. That's the fucking shit right there.
I love the enthusiasm. It's fucking great.
And then from Male Fantasy, spelled M-A-I-L, so like the shit you get.
They're just really infatuated with male.
From Male Fantasy, 5 stars and a heart. Forgot to log. This owns. Please take the, there's no characters complaint to somebody who actually gives a shit.
Excellent reviews. Bangers, I love them. Follow us on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and SlashRabbit Frightmares Podcast. Our email is staysspooky@outlook.com. You can find me personally on Letterboxd at Dr. Proctor. You are...
Frightmares Corey.
Booyah. Next week, me and Spencer are tackling John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness. So until then, stay tuned and...
stay spooky.